Line out, should have been in your prayer bulletin this evening. How many of you have ever been skiing before? Downhill skiing? Okay, all right, just maybe about a half a dozen or so. The author of the series that we're starting tonight, Kerry Schmidt, he writes about a time when he and his son went skiing to some slopes somewhere, and his son on the way down took a fall, hit his head, and Kerry had already gone on ahead of him. So he stopped, and eventually his son caught up to him, and his son mentioned to him, he said, "Oh, I fell, I hit my head." And he said, "Well, are you feeling all right?" He said, "Oh, I fell, I hit my head." And he was just repeating himself. So Kerry said, "Okay, this isn't good. Let's walk down the rest of the hill." So as they got closer to the aid station, whatever it's called, his symptoms started getting worse. And then they took him to the emergency room, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. As it turns out, he had a serious concussion. That was all. And so the hospital gave them instructions for what to do and sent them home. On the way home, his son made the statement that he just couldn't remember anything. Now imagine that happening to you. And he began to panic. And Dad pulled the car over and was trying to calm him down. His son was just going into panic mode. He was terrified of what was happening, and his son had lost all connection to reality. Everything that he used as reference points were gone from his mind, and so in a sense his identity was kind of blurred. Something similar to that can happen to us on a psychological level. His was more medically caused. But it can also happen on a spiritual level, too. And it can involve feelings of, with ourselves, confusion. Like sometimes we just feel confused, helpless psychologically, or confused and helpless spiritually. And there's a lot of other emotions that can come with that. Despair, discouragement, all kinds of things that can come along with that. But let's talk about losses for a moment. There are little ones, like losing your car keys, okay? Not a big deal unless you know they're in the river somewhere. I had to throw that in there. Not being able to find your glasses or your cell phone, although that could be a big problem for some people. So we have these little losses. But then there are the big ones. What are some big losses that we experience or could experience? Anybody? Losing a job, a spouse. You're talking about losing one? Yes, okay. All right. Or not that your spouse is the okay, all right. Yes, losing a job, losing a spouse. Anything else? Oh, losing our independence. Did I hear someone say health? I just did. Okay, there we go. We can, even if we don't lose someone by death, how about the loss of a relationship that we once had? That's a big loss. And a career is suddenly changed on us. Or financial security. That can be a big loss. Our health, independence, I like that. That was a good one. Sometimes the loss involves feeling valueless. I remember so clearly the day, I can't remember the day, it was when I was in Georgetown, and I was at the driver services facility getting my license renewed. And I'm sitting there in the chair waiting, and this older gentleman came up and trying to get his license renewed. And he wasn't passing the test. so they tried it again, and he wasn't passing the test. And I'm sitting there observing this and watching him as they explained, we can't give you a driver's license. And his face just melted. I mean, it was so sad. You could almost see the feeling of valuelessness on his face. That's got to be a hard thing, okay? Or sometimes that loss involves the feeling of meaninglessness or hopeless. And we get these feelings when we have a big loss. And then we begin to wonder, why are we here? Do we sink into despair? Some people do. Depression, not quite as bad as despair. How about just discouragement? We're blue, we're melancholy. If it was some failure on our part, okay, we did something, we blew it, it didn't turn out right, so do we pull ourselves together and try harder, and this time we're going to get it right? You know where we could see that, too, a lot of times, is spiritually. And we measure ourselves, and we've covered this before, we measure ourselves spiritually by our performance, okay? And then we wonder, what's the point? What is the point of all this? Who am I? What am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? How about this? What gives me value in this world? Because the thing that I thought gave me value, my job, my career, my retirement account, whatever it was, is suddenly gone. All of those questions we can ask ourselves, at least at the subconscious level. So ideally, life goes like this. We work hard in school. Well, parents would like to see us work hard in school, okay? We graduate. We pursue our dreams, right? In fact, we're told, especially our senior year and even at graduation, you can be whoever you want to be. And then you throw the American dream in there. You can accomplish anything if you work hard enough. And through hard work over several years, we diligently try to build a sense of self. This is who I am. And we base it on different reference points, okay? But we try to build this sense of self and identity, okay? Now, Delbert, can I use you tonight? Okay, what are you? Yes. You're a Christian. Oh, the Sunday school answer. Okay. 10 years ago, he would have said, oh, I'm a teacher, maybe. Okay. A lot of times, especially with guys, that's how we identify ourselves, by what we do. Okay. But what happens if you've been this for 40 years and then all of a sudden you're downsized? What are you? Your whole sense of identity is now gone because of what you were gaining your identity from. A lot of times we, in our identity, it's based on I have done this, or I am this. I have friends, and that's where someone may get their identity from. People like me. Which is great, until people don't like you. Then what do you do, okay? People admire me. But what happens when people stop admiring you? Your identity is lost. And then subconsciously, we tie our hearts to the things that we achieve in life. And so they become connected. And we come to believe that those things define us and they give us security and meaning. We begin to draw value and happiness from those things. And then they begin to own us. None of these things are permanent, though. You can lose a job, lose your health, lose your money. All of those things could be gone just like that. Lose a relationship, lose a loved one, and then what? So there's always the fear of losing them. Let me give you an example. And I kind of touched on it just a moment ago. I've had this job for 30 years. I have climbed the ladder in my career. All these years, I've been climbing, promoting, getting promoted, working hard. We feel good. Downsized. Whoa, now what? Or a recession hits. Bad investments. Lost my savings. Now what? Or someone says something about me, and I might lose people's good opinion of me because of what they said about me. And if something like that is what we get our identity from, thankfully I don't, okay, because I would be a basket case. If we get our identity from that, a person's good opinion of me, then we're going to be constantly in fear of what someone might be saying about me and how that's going to impact other people's opinion of me. And so then we become what? We become focused on our image, and we're focused on making sure we present the good image, okay? And what do with that fear? We bury it. We tend to bury it. And then we just try even harder to secure those things that bring us our security instead of dealing with the fear. We try harder to secure those things that are going to secure self, our self-identity that we have constructed over the years. And we try to strengthen that identity that we've created based on our health or our looks, our income, our status, our accomplishments, our relationships, whatever the case is. And then we can sometimes be haunted by comparison. So I've been in this job for 30 years. I've reached this point, and then I compare myself to someone else who's been in the job 20 years, and they're higher than me. Oh, I'm failing somewhere. What went wrong? I thought I had attained my dreams, but now I haven't. And that's the result of the comparisons. Or we're haunted by the opinions of others because we don't want to look bad, right? Competition comes into the picture. Competition with others and or fear of others. And we end up forever trying to measure up to the world around us because we're comparing ourselves with everyone else. Okay? So when we do measure up, or we think we do, we feel good because in comparison, all right. But when we don't measure up by comparison, we feel loss. And the cycle just continues. We feel lost, so we try harder and harder, and then we compare ourselves, but then something happens, and we don't measure up, more loss, we try harder, and that cycle continues to repeat itself. James actually addresses that. Look at this verse, James chapter 1. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith, of course the verse goes on, but that's what's in that phrase, the trying of your faith. Just stuff that happens in life. So how do we stop that? That's where God moves in. Mark chapter 8 and verse 35. It's not a pleasant verse. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's the same shall save it. Now we're going to come back to that verse at the end of our study tonight, and hopefully you'll have a richer perspective on what that means to save and or lose your life. So let's look at our outline. Number one, defining identity. How would you define yourself? Now, we already know the Sunday school answer, okay? How would you define yourself? Anyone want to attempt that? Carlton, thank you for scratching your nose. That's close enough to a hand raise. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how would you describe yourself? Okay. Husband, a father. I'm asking you how you would describe your... If you got to make stuff up, we need to talk. What's that? A soldier. Okay. Still? Okay. Ooh. All right. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And we would all probably identify ourselves with some of those similar things, okay? You noticed how he identified himself. A husband, you said that first, didn't you? Good move, okay? And then a father, and then a soldier, okay? That's based on, so that's typical guy stuff there. But what happens if all of those are gone? How would you define yourself? And that's where we're coming into this concept of identity. So let's in your outline there, identity, your idea of who you are. We'll just kind of simply define it that way right now. Your idea of who you are. The story that you tell about yourself. If you meet someone for the first time and they say, "Tell me about yourself." What comes out next is the idea of who you are. And we work hard to construct it and secure it. I've never met anyone that I've asked, "Tell me about yourself." Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a failure, you know. my wife left me, my kids won't talk to me. I get fired after 3 weeks of every job that I've ever had, so I don't even look for jobs now. In fact, my job is spending your tax dollars that I get for free. Hey, how about that? I've never had anyone describe themselves that way, okay? So your idea of who you are, "This is who I am." That's your identity. Our self-made identity is not only based on factual things, like Carlton. He's a husband, he's a father, he is always a soldier, okay? And those are factual things. They're not made up, they're real. But also included in who we think we are just what I said, who we think we are. How many of you think that you're a nice person? Raise your hand if you think you're a nice person. Not every hand's going up. Let's try it again. How many of you think you're a nice person? Okay. Some of you need to talk to me tonight for a reality check, okay? Most people think they're a nice person. Okay, but would we say that about everyone? No, but everyone thinks they're a nice person. It's kind of like in America. Everyone claims to be a Christian, okay? Is that factual? No, but they think it is so. So that goes into things that we think we are, goes into our identity. And then the things that we think we are. I'm a nice person. I'm a likable person. That's what I think I am. So then what we do with the things we think we are, because they're not based on factual things like I'm a husband, a father, and this or whatever, we think we're this. So then we begin looking externally to find things to support the things that we think we are. And then we look outside of ourselves for affirmation. People or affirmation to confirm that I am this person, okay? We are, I think, hardwired to need someone external from us, someone that we value, respect, or love, to approve of our identity. We're hardwired to want that, to need that. And God calls identity the inner man. So let's in just a moment, we're going to look at a verse, okay, that talks about that. But I want you to be thinking of this concept here, our identity, who we think we are, our inner self. Ephesians 3:16, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory to be strengthened with might by his spirit in the inner man. So when this inner self is weak, how do we feel? How do you think? And you can say how you feel or how you think someone else might feel when our inner self is weak. Ephesians 3:16 talks about our inner man needing to be strengthened. So when it's weak, how is someone feeling at that time? Failure. Okay, there's a good word. What else? Vulnerable. Okay. And unworthy. Yep. Depressed. Defeated. Anything else? How about frustrated? Oh, why can't I get this right? I am such a failure. Comes right after that, okay? We can feel anxious, fearful, defeated, I think someone said, unhappy even, inadequate. Yeah. When that inner self, our identity is strong, we feel secure, confident, fulfilled, valuable, all the opposites of everything you were all just saying. Purposeful, happy, okay? At least temporarily. And this is this unseen force that often drives our emotions, as you all just gave me a bunch of emotions that we feel when our inner self is weak. And that force drives our emotions, which ultimately impacts our behaviors too. Okay? So you tell me if this is incorrect, okay? And so I'm just going to throw something out there, and you don't have to lay claim to it and say, oh, yeah, I've done that before. Don't do that, okay? But you go to work, and again, third day in a row, you make the same stupid mistake. And I say stupid because you've already made it the 2 days before, and you should know better. And your boss just rides you and rails on you, and you come home, and you're like, oh, man, what are you feeling right there? What could that person be feeling? Frustrated, right. Or even extreme, failure, okay? So then that's the emotion. And I remember I said our emotions can then ultimately drive our behaviors. How are you behaving when you come home? Angry. Ornery, cantankerous, grouchy, you name it. Those are words to describe our actions when we come home. And God also refers to identity as the heart. Okay? Now, let's look at this verse, Proverbs 4:23. Keep thy heart, your inner man, your identity with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. That's the verse that you hear me quote many times this way. As a man thinks, that's what he does. As a man thinks, that's what he does. Okay? We are challenged in that verse to guard it carefully. So let's move on to the second point. Balsa wood identities. I checked every store in town today and I couldn't find one. What is wrong with these stores today? How many of you grew up with those balsa wood airplanes? Oh, why don't they sell them anymore? I even went to Dollar Tree. You, you should at least be able to get that at Nope. They had foam ones, and they had those bigger styrofoam ones, okay? But we used to buy those balsa wood planes all the time, really thin wood. And this point is called balsa wood identities, because what is it that's true about those balsa wood airplanes? Just like that. They just crumble, okay? They can be shattered, splintered, destroyed, just like that. And this is how author Kerry Schmidt describes our self-constructed identities. They're like balsa wood. C.S. Lewis said this, and I think I hope I have that quote in your notes there. Do not let your happiness depend on something you may lose. Wow. That, you think, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but it is so profound. And so many times we let our happiness depend, be regulated, be altered, be increased or decreased by something that we can lose, whether it's money, job, health, admiration, respect, friends, whatever it is. And we rely on that for happiness, security, because that's part of our self-constructed identity. Of all of the disciples, which one comes to mind as being the most confident? Peter, okay, all right. So we're going to start talking about Peter tonight and then talk some more about him next week. So what do we know about Peter? He was what? Shipwrecked, yeah. Is that what you said? Okay, all right. What else do we know about Peter? He's a fisherman, right. They make lots of money, don't they? Well, if that's what he aspired to from the time he was a kid, if he increased his identity based on his work, he was probably poorer than that as a boy, okay? And so we can assume, I'm just assuming this, he was a poor kid. He became a fisherman. Success, okay? He made something of himself. He had his own boat. Wow. I mean, that's no big deal for us, okay? But for them in that economy, wow. He wasn't wealthy, but he wasn't a beggar on the street either. He wasn't gleaning grain on the sides of the fields after harvest to get by in life. And then what happened? Jesus called him to follow Jesus. And what happened next? He began to see himself as a revolutionary. Now, the Bible doesn't say that, but as we look at his actions, we can insert that there. He began to see himself as, remember, this is a poor kid who got his own fishing boat and was fishing. And now he's seeing himself as a future leader in government. Do you remember they were arguing over who was going to be the greatest when the Messiah set up his earthly kingdom, or what they thought would be the earthly kingdom? And his new identity was all about pride. It was full of pride. He followed Jesus, just like all the disciples did, with his own script in mind that he had constructed of how this Messiah and the new kingdom was going to work out. So he scripted this all in his mind at the way he thought things should be. And this is how balsa wood identities are constructed. Our self-constructed identities based on external things and comparison and things that we may lose, they're like balsa wood. They can be shattered in a moment. We shape ourselves, we shape our world, and some people even shape God to their own ideas on how they think it should be. We sometimes, I'll just say we sometimes even shape his word to mean what we want it to mean so that it fits our self-constructed identity. And we try to create ourselves rather than embracing how we are created. There's a big difference there. Why can't we just embrace the way God created us? Well, we'll talk about that some more in the weeks to come, but let me just throw this out there. The reason we don't, I think, embrace the way God created us is because comparison. And lots of factors, you know, our culture, the American dream, expectations of our culture or people in our lives that are important to us. They expect us to be or do a certain thing, be a certain way. And we tend to not embrace who God created us to be. And toward the end of Christ's ministry, many people walked away from him. Why? Because he wasn't delivering on their ideas of what he should be doing. And so they walked away. Peter's balsa wood identity was shattered the night Jesus was arrested. Put yourself in Peter's shoes. You just spent 3 years following Jesus. You grew up, perhaps, most likely a poor kid. You're a fisherman. You got your own boat. You walk away from that. You know this is the Messiah because of the works he's done. He's proven his messiahship. And now you're waiting for the new kingdom to be established. And you're part of his cabinet right now, okay? You're going to have a position in this new government. We're going to overthrow Rome, get them off of our backs. Your whole identity is based on your plan of things. And then the monkey wrench comes in. Jesus gets arrested. Now, just prior to that, Christ told them it was going to happen. I don't know if they didn't believe it. There's in the biblical account, there's not really any question about it. It's like he said it and totally went over their heads. And on the way to the Garden of Gethsemane, right after that, after he told them what was going to happen, they're on the way to the garden, and that is where they're arguing over who's going to be the greatest, who's going to be the vice president, who's going to be the secretary of defense, or whatever, you know, positions they were arguing about. And then Jesus is praying. Peter's asleep. The guards come. Peter wakes up. And what does he do? He immediately pulls his sword and takes a whack at the high priest's servant. Then Jesus healed the servant, calmed everything down. Remember, you're Peter, your identity, your plan of what you think is going to be. And then Jesus does the unthinkable. He surrenders. That didn't fit into Peter's plan. Not at all. The house of cards that he had constructed is falling really quick. Their identities, his and the other disciples, they had been self-made based on what they thought things should be. The other disciples immediately fled. Their house gone, and they run. Peter, he followed from a distance. No doubt confused, trying to figure out what is going on here. And then, we know the story, the denials take place. And the cock crowed. Peter remembered Christ's words. Jesus looks at him. Peter looks up, their eyes meet, and Peter remembered those words. And what he had done suddenly became crystal clear to him. His identity was smashed by his failure. Now, it's interesting, and we might touch on this some next week. After that was all done, where did Peter go? Where do we find him? Fishing, okay? So, potential cabinet leader in the new kingdom. Failure. I'll just go back to fishing. Do you remember? How did that fishing trip work? He didn't catch anything. Can you imagine poor Peter? I failed at this. I'm a failure at fishing too. I can't even catch a fish anymore. What good am I? What is my purpose in this world? Why did God make me? And his whole identity has been completely crushed. His overconfident, impetuous self crumbled into this pile of splinters. Total loss. So the question, what do you allow to define you? Who or what gets to say who you are? Here's what we get from our identity, however it's made, okay? Our identity is essentially our source of three things, okay? Our identity, from that we get acceptance. Who accepts me and why? What is my strongest source of affirmation? We also get security from our identity. When our identity, our inner self, is strong, We feel accepted, we feel secure, okay? So a question to ask ourselves there is, to whom or what do I look for stability or security? But then we also get significance as well. What most gives me a sense of value? What makes my existence meaningful? Let me help you with those questions there. Acceptance, security, significance. Those three things that we get from identity. Where do we look for these three things? Well, we look who validates or affirms us. People. So we look to people to get the things that we need from our identity. What we do well to gain that validation, that's based on performance. So we look to people for those three things, and we look at our performance for those three things. Generally, that's how it goes. Our identity actually begins forming in childhood based on behaviors that other people applaud. Because as kids, we like applause, don't we? We like being told, good job, right? And this begins then this lifelong quest of a performance-driven identity. We learn at a young age, I do good, I get applause, I get approval. So then we're constantly trying to do to get approval the rest of our lives. Here are some of the subconscious thoughts behind this. I am what I do. I am what I'm good at. I need others to approve of me. Performing well makes me valuable. Ever had the thought, don't raise your hand, I'm no good, okay? Usually don't say that after you succeed at something. Failing to perform makes me a, what? Failure. A life based on performance is what that is. And we even see that in the Christian life. Sometimes people will decide, I'm a good Christian because look at what I do. That doesn't make us a good Christian. A good Christian is someone who loves God and loves others. That's it. Those are the two aspects in a nutshell right there. If we love God and we love others, what does Jesus say? If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. The performance will come after we love God. But you've heard me say this before too. Some of the things that we do as Christians, you could teach a monkey to do and he doesn't love God, okay? That's putting the performance first, the actions first. Here's another thing. What we own substantiates and secures that validation. We're talking about possessions. So people, performance, possessions. That's where we get the acceptance, security, and significance from, generally speaking, with our self-constructed identities. We seek a kind of acceptance, security, and significance that we don't have to earn and we can never lose. Wouldn't that be great to have that kind of acceptance, security, and significance? The problem is we tend to look to temporary things to get those. We look to others to accept us, okay? Do all of you in this room tonight, I'm just going to throw myself, make myself vulnerable. Do all of you in here tonight accept me? Well, half of you said yes. Have all of you always accepted me? Don't answer. You see, we change, don't we? Spouses, well, let's not even go there. We know the answer there, right? Not always. It's not always. We look to our abilities to validate us. I am a good pastor because everyone likes me. Did you see what I just did there? I am a good pastor based on my perception of how other people feel about me. And we look to our personal desires or dreams to give us purpose. So especially someone graduating from high school, they have these desires, these dreams in life, and that's what they start working toward. What happens when you turn 54 and you haven't achieved those dreams yet? A good friend of mine, when my children were small, he had a dream of being a millionaire by the time he was 30. And he was a go-getter. He could turn anything into money, okay? So he was telling me this because that year he turned 30. And he was a millionaire. $1 million in debt because of the truck stop that he bought, okay? And it's not exactly, he should have been more specific in his dream, I guess. Sometimes our dreams, my goals go into the identity that I create. Like kind of like Peter and the disciples, they had their plan of how this whole Messiah kingdom thing was going to work. Next week, we are going to go deeper into Peter's life and our current culture to see how and where we may be getting our identities. But let's end up with our main verse. This is the one that I told you about at the beginning. With what we have covered tonight, this verse may now have a deeper meaning. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. And we're going to go back to this verse some more. But let's do this. Whosoever will save his identity, his self-made identity, is going to lose it. That's what happened to Peter. But whosoever shall lose his self-made identity for my sake and the gospel's, that's where a true identity comes from, the same shall save it. All right, so let's stop there tonight and have some prayer time.